Michael Pollan is a best-selling author. His new book is entitled How to Change Your Mind, What the New Science of Psychedelics Teaches Us About Consciousness, Dying, Addiction, Depression, and Transcendence. And full disclosure, I have been a fan of Michael Pollan's writing for years, and it is an absolute honor for me to have him on the line with me right now. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Doug. How are you?
I'm doing well. Now, your new book, How to Change Your Mind. I understand the idea for it came about when you were interviewing cancer patients who had undergone psychotherapy using psychedelics. I should mention, by the way, that I'm a cancer survivor, 15 years and counting. Anyway, tell us about your book, first of all.
Sure. Well, you know, it did start with a magazine article I did for The New Yorker a couple of years ago called The Trip Treatment. And for that piece, I had heard about these trials going on at both NYU and Johns Hopkins, where they were giving psilocybin, which is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, to cancer patients, people who were struggling with what the doctors called existential distress, the terror and anxiety that accompanies that diagnosis and the fear of death. And this struck me as the weirdest idea that you would take a psychedelic when you were in that situation. But they were finding that a single guided experience, and I'll explain in a minute what I mean by that, would really completely reset people's attitude toward death and their cancer, and in many cases remove their fear of dying to an extraordinary degree. And it was in the course of talking to a handful of these volunteers and that I just became intensely curious to understand how a molecule could change something as profound as your existential predicament.
Afterward, too, there's the PTSD, frankly, because you cannot deal with that dread while you're undergoing treatment. If you survive, when you survive, that's when suddenly it hits.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the survivors actually struggled, of course, even when they'd been treated successfully, there was the fear of recurrence, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. And I remember interviewing this one woman, her name was Dina Baser, and she was about 60. She had had ovarian cancer. It had been successfully treated. It was in remission. And she, but she was paralyzed by fear, and she could not go about her life. She heard about this trial at NYU and participated and had a guided psychedelic journey. And in the middle of that journey, like a lot of the cancer patients, she went into her body imaginatively and she saw this black mass under her rib cage. She knew it wasn't her cancer because it wasn't in the right place, but she recognized it at once. And she said, "That's my fear." And when she saw her fear, this black mass, she screamed at it. She said, "Get the F out of my life." And with that, at that moment, it vanished. And it never came back, she said. And she said she realized during that experience that while she couldn't control her cancer, it was either going to come back or not, she could control her fear. And it was the drug that allowed her to have that insight and to really believe in it. And she has, she said her life was changed by it. And again, this is one day, not a drug you take every day, but one you take, you know, once or twice. And she had, after that moment when the fear disappeared, she had this ecstatic experience. And she said that I kissed the face of God. And I was really surprised when she said that to me because she had told me she was an atheist. And I said, "But wait, aren't you an atheist?" And she said, "Yes, I'm still an atheist." And I said, "Well, you just said you kissed the face of God." And she said, "Well, we don't have any word big enough for what I felt. So I use the biggest word we have, and that's God. But I'm still an atheist."
Wow. Now, of course, you're not limiting your work on psychedelics. You're also looking at LSD, ayahuasca.
Yeah. DMT, a drug called 5-MeO-DMT, which is a very powerful and strange psychedelic. Yeah, no, I looked at the whole range of them, not all of them. I didn't look at mescaline very much. But, you know, they're similar drugs in that they all affect the same receptors in the brain, the serotonin 2A receptors. So they have similar modes of action, but interesting distinctions, too. So, for example, LSD is not being used in the clinical research, because, at least in the United States, for a couple of reasons. One is it's a more controversial drug than psilocybin, which many people have never heard of, and also because it takes so long. The LSD experience is about 12 hours, and the psilocybin experience is about half that. So, you know, you'd have to pay all the therapists and guides overtime if you were giving LSD to patients. It's just not practical.
I know there are various, there's a couple of pharmas that are working toward developing psilocybin as a medical therapy. What do you think down the road? How far do you think we are from having, from FDA approval of having actual psilocybin available for psychotherapy?
You know, not as far as you might think or that I assumed a few years ago when I started on this work. The FDA, who obviously has to approve our drugs, just gave breakthrough therapy designation to psilocybin in the treatment of depression. That means that the FDA will help the researchers, in this case a pharmaceutical company from England called Compass Pathways, to go through the approval process and help them in the design of their trials and basically speed things along. So it could be in just a couple of years. You know, we've done phase two trials of psilocybin for several things, and the last phase is phase three, where you give it to a larger group. And we're getting started on those phase three trials now. So it may be, you know, within 5 years that doctors will have access to this treatment. But I hasten to add, it's not going to be a deal where you get a prescription from your doctor for psilocybin and go to CVS or Walgreens to get it filled. It really is psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, so that the role of the therapist is as important as the role of the molecule. And you need someone to prepare you very carefully. There are usually two guides, a man and a woman, and they tell you what to expect before you even take the drugs. They give you advice if something really terrifying happens, which often does, or sometimes does, how to deal with that. They call them flight instructions. And the basic overall recommendation is that you surrender to whatever is happening. If you feel you're going crazy or dying or dissolving, go with it. Don't try to fight it. It's when you fight it that you get a bad trip. And then during the experience, which, as I said, lasts from 4 to 6 hours, the guides are with you the entire time, not saying much, but available to you, giving you a sense of comfort, you know, that somebody's watching over your body while your mind is traveling. And that's incredibly important. And then you come back the next day or two and meet with your guides and tell them what happened. And they help you make sense of it. They kind of interpret it. And it's called an integration session. And that, too, is very important. So it's important to understand we're not just talking about a drug therapy. This is a hybrid of drugs and psychotherapy.
I've got to ask. In terms of the medicalization model, here in Oregon, there is a ballot measure that's being an initiative petition that's being circulated to become a ballot measure, which would medicalize, in some respects, pretty much the psilocybin. Of course, that would sort of, it's a shortcut not waiting for FDA.
Yeah.
What do you think of the, have you had a chance to look at the thing? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I gather that the language is still being worked on. So there's really nothing definitive to look at. I understand the basic idea is to legalize in the state of Oregon psychedelic therapy, whether for sick people or not, and that's a pretty bold move. I have to read it before I can really make a judgment. I think it's a very well-intentioned effort to take the really good work that's going on in the underground, where I worked with several therapists who were working underground, because otherwise, there's no access to this unless you're part of the trials, to make that work legal and decriminalize it or legalize it. I'm not sure exactly what it specifies. In general, I think that ballot initiatives are not the best way to make law. I know we've made progress with cannabis using ballot initiatives, but cannabis is a very different drug. And, you know, it's just, this is a much bigger experience. You need some guidance. The risks are much greater psychologically. And so I worry a little bit about making these decisions right now while we're going through this FDA process. I feel very protective of the research going on, and I'd hate to see a backlash if we begin having a political battle about psilocybin before people really understand it or know what it's about. That said, you know, I gather it's a very carefully crafted initiative with training specified, and will be done in consultation with state, you know, regulatory and health authorities and that kind of thing. So I gather it's a very thoughtful approach. I just don't know, you know, why we don't wait for this process that is unfolding right now at the federal level. Is this the right time? You know, the thing about politics is you not only have to decide what you want to fight for, but you have to decide when's the best time to fight for it. And my gut is this isn't quite the time. Maybe by 2020 it will be, and that's when it will be on the battle. But anyway, I'm coming to Portland on Saturday to speak, and I'm hoping to learn more about this initiative then, and with luck meet with the people behind it.
What kind of takeaways do you hope people will come away with?
Yeah, well, it's actually an onstage interview, and so I never know what we're going to talk about. But what I usually talk about is tell a little bit about how I got involved in this work, why I think it's so important, and actually promises a potential revolution in mental health care in this country. You know, we have a mental health care system that's really broken. Rates of depression, suicide, addiction are climbing. The tools of psychiatry are, even by psychiatrists' own admission, really imperfect. They only deal with symptoms. Many of them are addictive. They have really bad side effects. And here comes a drug that's remarkably non-toxic, non-addictive, that you don't have to take every day for the rest of your life, that can not just address symptoms, but in many cases cure people of things like alcoholism and smoking addiction and cocaine addiction and potentially other things as well. So it's a very exciting time, and I like to talk a little bit about what the researchers are up to, tell some stories about the volunteers I've interviewed, and then I go into my own experience, because I felt I couldn't write this book without knowing from the inside what psychedelic therapy looks like. So I had a series of guided journeys on psilocybin, but also on LSD and ayahuasca and 5-MeO-DMT. And, you know, there were amazing travel stories. And so I'll share some of those also. And we always, of course, take questions from the audience. And this debate over, it's very timely to be in Portland, because this, you know, you are, as often as the case, you're going to be on the forefront. There was a decriminalization initiative that was passed last week in Denver that would basically make psilocybin crimes, at least for possession and use and cultivation, the lowest priority for the police department. I would have supported that if I, you know, lived in Denver and had the vote there. But in general, I'm a little cautious about legalization, because I think that people are using the model of cannabis, and the drugs could not be more different. This drug is, the stakes are much higher. It has to be treated with a lot of reverence and preparation. And I just don't think we know exactly how to, yet, how to fold this into our society in a way that will be safe and constructive.
There would obviously have to be some very specific training for the guides. I mean, this doesn't sound like, I mean, it's certainly not standard psychotherapy from my understanding.
No, and there are, you know, and that training is going on. I mean, there is a program in San Francisco. It's at an institution called the California Institute for Integral Studies that is offering now a certificate in psychedelic therapy. That's how far we've come. The MAPS organization, Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, is offering trainings. And then, of course, their underground training is going on all the time. So, yeah, training is very important. The other thing you have to do is qualify people to take the drug. In other words, it's not for everyone. People at risk of serious mental illness, things like schizophrenia or manic depression, they are disqualified from the university trials. And so it's very important that you be interviewed by someone and that a doctor has signed off, I think, before you take this drug. In my case, I was nearing 60 when I first took the drugs, and I went to my cardiologist to get his opinion because I had I had something called AFib, which is an irregular heartbeat, occasional irregular heartbeat. And people need to be careful. And I think we send the wrong message if we simply legalize these drugs by ballot initiative.
Well, folks, again, we've been speaking with Michael Pollan, the best-selling author. His new book, which is just hitting shelves now, is entitled How to Change Your Mind, What the New Science of Psychedelics Teaches Us About Consciousness, Dying, Addiction, Depression, and Transcendence. He'll be speaking on Saturday, May 18th at Keller Auditorium. Details are available at the website michaelpollan.com/appearances. Michael Pollan, I thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Doug.
This is Doug McVeigh for KBOO News.